friends and folks, welcome to episode 1 of season 2 of The Garnet Wager. I am the first host, Six Detmar. Six Detmar.
Hi.
Hey, Alan.
How's it going?
Not bad. You want to introduce yourself?
Yes, definitely. I am Alan Ibrahim. I am your other co-host, your gamer, your player, your friend.
We're here, of course, because we love the genius. We were originally here because we were like, the genius seems kind of all right. And so we recorded a podcast and we're like, hey, it's actually really good. So we're doing season 2 now. And for season 2, we have a new gimmick. We're not doing challenges anymore. What are we doing, Alan?
Well, instead of having the game be this separate thing that we work on and have fun with, but kind of... It's not as fun for the listener as it is for us. Mm-hmm. We're doing something that everyone can kind of partake in, and it has more to do with watching the genius, which is we're going to be doing a genius draft.
Mm-hmm.
Care to explain the rules?
Okay, so this is Fantasy Genius, and basically the way this works is we're going to each draft 3 contestants before the show starts, aka right now. Redrafting will occur if you are in last place for 2 episodes, if you want. You don't have to. Or when a contestant on your team is eliminated, you have to redraft at that point. Points will be assigned for what players are on your team during the episode based on their actions. And once we get to a point where we no longer have enough remaining players for both of us to have full teams of 3, we'll both drop down to 1. As far as the scoring methodology, I'll probably put that in the intro with the Bandage Man voice and also give you like a text version because I don't want to sit here and read this whole list, but it's fun. If you want to play along, I think you'll have a good time. It's a good little set of rules as to how to gain fantasy points for actions like, you know, winning main matches or, you know, like forming alliances or for, eating at the cheese plate while everybody else is playing the game. You know, lots of fun ways to gain points. So, Alan, we're going to go ahead and do a little, like, back and forth. It's like a snake draft, only that's pointless because there's 2 of us. So it's just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Right?
Right.
Okay. As the loser of the Garnet Wager Season 1, I will go ahead and go first. And for my first draft, Team 6 picks Lee Song-min.
Fuck!
You knew I was gonna. That was part of why I had this setup of, like, I really hope I get to go first.
Yeah.
It's a race for Songman.
Okay, fair enough. Is it my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Team Allen takes for their first pick, No Hung Chul.
Damn, that was actually gonna be mine.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. For my second pick... Gosh... There's so many stars are out tonight. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking at these people. And I'm like, man, there's some fucking killers. I'm actually gonna pick, Lim Yun Sun.
Fuck, that was gonna be mine!
Really?
Sucks. Yes!
I was not committed to that one. I was like, man, there's so many good people. But go ahead with your next pick then, I guess.
We are at the point now where I have to start making combative picks. Like, counter picks. It's mm-hmm. like Dota. Have you ever played Dota before, Six? So Dota
is like,
basically
is that
like
Dippin' Dots?
Kind of. It's like Dippin' Dots. Team Allen picks for the winning squad, Hong Jin-ho.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
well,
baby. I like winning is the thing.
Yeah, the thing is, if you have Jin... Like, I was thinking about this, and it was like,
yeah.
I was wondering if we could go without either of us picking Jin-ho. Not because he's great, but the thing is, if one of us picks Ho, if one of us picks Jin-ho, then obviously the other person has to pick Lim Yuan.
Yeah, but if you remember on our stat screen, a boxer, Lim Yuan, has 1 less social game, and that's huge, baby. That's huge.
It is. But also, I talked to Reese, and he indicated that, of course, Boxer only has a game sense of 5 because 7 isn't fair. That's not true. I made that up.
Okay.
All right. 1 pick left, Alan.
No, Oh, boy. What's your next pick? Are you taking...
I picked Living Boxer. On? I'm out.
Okay.
I'm three.
Oh, now we're in the weeds, of just in terms of people I don't know. Golly gee.
I mean, there's a magician. He could make some magic happen.
I know, I was looking at
You know what I'm saying? Way. He could sleep with somebody.
What?
You know, make the magic happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, this is where I make the magic. That's a thing that you sexual people say, right?
You sexual people! Yeah, that's what we do say! I guess you're right! Shit! I'm trying to find someone that has good social game. Ooh, ooh! The hacker. Oh. No, my third pick is Nam Huijong.
Oh, risky pick.
Extremely.
All right. Well, with that, our teams are finalized. My team is Lee Songmin, Lim Yusong, Yoon Sun. I gotta listen to the genius so I know how to say these names. Okay. It's Yoon Sun, I think. But we're gonna learn this shit. And Lim Yuan. Alan, your picks are.
My picks are No Hong Chul, Hong Jin Ho, and Nam Huijong.
And with that, the match is set, and the stage of history is prepared.
The soul still burns. Probably.
Astaroth! All right.
Let's watch the genius! Yay!
The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Players accumulate points based on the actions of their chosen fantasy contestants in the game show, and these points are tracked over the course of the season. The player that wins in fantasy points for that episode wins the episode and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. This competition is not just for the hosts. Rules are made available to anyone who wants to play as you listen along with us. Welcome to Season 2. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Welcome back, friends and folks, to the other side of the intro, which I haven't... I gotta do a new intro.
The Garnet Wager is a good game full of nice players. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, Alan? It is now because somebody left.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Oh,
wow.
Oh. Hi, I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Alan Ibrahim.
And we're here to talk about Season 2, Episode 1 of The Genius. The season is called Rule Breaker. Yeah, they did this. So okay, we'll get, but general impressions. We're gonna be a little less granular than we were last season, as far as just like breaking down every event chronologically, because I want to talk more about players and plays and the whole thingamajig, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first off, I feel like the first topic of discussion is we've got ourselves a new house.
We do, and it's got a lot of fun new settings.
Yeah, so like, okay, let's see. It's got like the opening like hall is like a bunch of paintings of, I guess they're supposed to be geniuses. There's like an Obama Hope painting up in there.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you didn't notice? Yeah.
No.
There's just the classic Obama Hope meme is just on the wall.
Oh God.
Along with some other paintings of and photos, I guess, of geniuses. And like, there's like a pool room, and there's like a room that just has like a bunch of like hammers on the wall, and like what do you make of the, like, what does the new setting say to you? I don't know, what are they trying to convey? There's just guitars in the corner and
whatever. Yeah, the set dressing is so much. I feel like it's just to make interesting looking shots and to be. It's sort of like how on Friends, their kitchen was always like incredibly well stocked, even though they never used any of that stuff, just because you want to get across the feeling that that's a busy kitchen and people are walking in and out of it. And like all of the rooms in this place just feel like biomes or something. Like this is the quintessential scene. My favorite, the one that immediately comes to mind when we talk about the sets, is the attic. I guess it's an attic. Where there's just a crate that everybody can sit around, and there's like a radio and a TV in the corner, and then just like a bunch of weird shit hanging on the walls. That's the kind of room that I really like to see. It's just like, here's the vibe of this room. You can get it across real quick, and it's just a fun place for us to talk.
I really want, like, I want some shot, like, some one of these episodes, I want, like, there to be, like a, you know, they're cutting around seeing what everyone's doing, and they cut to the room with the guitar, and it's just Hong Chul, like, leaning on a stool, shredding on the guitar.
So we're going to talk about him right away, that he's the best boy?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know that we have too much else to say, other than apparently the Bandage Man has a new room as well. He's got a new, like, fancy, like, sci-fi room full of computers.
He's got, yeah, he works at a tech company. He's got multiple monitors, and he works in IT. It's awesome.
Yeah, and, like, also, I feel like they did a better job of presenting the players this time, because last time it was just, like, the normal, like, everybody files in at the beginning of season one, but as they did, there was a guy being like, this person's really cool because they like chess, you know? And they really did, like, a proper presentation of everybody this time. So let's talk about everybody. Let's talk about the folks.
I think the presentation of the cast in this opening was really good because, like you said, you know who everybody is quick enough. And I don't know if this is true or not, but they felt like they were more recognizable. They were expected to be more recognizable to Koreans watching it, at least, because, you know, everybody's walking in and everyone's like immediately nice. And you have Hong Chul, and I love him not only because he's becoming what I liked about Songmin this last season. I didn't want to say he's this season's Songmin, because that's not, that's wrong. But he just, every time someone comes in, he's like, whoa, that person's here? Like, that's awesome. I love that person from popular culture. Like, this is a fun cast, and it makes me feel that way.
Yeah, and I feel like also, you mentioned, like, if they're supposed to stand out more. They stand out more to me as well, and that, like, part of that's because we did a little more research this time, and also, I watched the episode twice because I was also taking... I did a pass where I did notes, and then I did a pass where I did fantasy points. And I think I'm just going to do that going forward. That was a positive experience. But also, like, they're visually distinct in a way that, like, in season one, we had Jun Se-yuk, Jin Ho, and Chung Yup in the same house. And I'm sorry, those boys look similar.
Yeah, well, they're all just, like, younger-looking, fresh-faced boys. Mm-hmm. Everybody, even if you're like, if you're a dude here, you probably have a different color of hair, and if you're a woman, your hair is styled completely differently. There is very, it's much easier for me so far to identify who is who.
Yeah, I feel like the most similar, like, you could have some problems among, like, Yoon Sung, the lawyer, Jae Kyung, the pop idol, and Yoo Young, who,
yes.
Actually, I'm not clear on what Yoo Young does.
She's not the lead singer of Rainbow?
No, that's Jae Kyung, who I wanted to mention. I mean, like, listen, you know, there were some points in season one where we were, like, talking about people and we just took a moment to be, like, boy hot. Girl hot. That's our inaugural girl hot. That's our first girl hot. Is that girl hot?
She's got a good look. It's a strong, again, a powerful look. I say that phrase a lot. It's just she has a good sense of style and she carries herself very well. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I remember you were really anxious. Well, anxious is a little strong, but you had some apprehension about Yoon Kyul the magician.
Yeah.
How's that treating you so far?
If I have any minor issues with the cast so far, it's that even though, like, their occupations and skills seem really fleshed out and good right now, I don't feel like they're coming into their own as characters yet, which they don't have to. They are just people. But, like, Yoon Kyul should be a lot more ridiculous, and he's kind of just in it having a good time. Like, he smiles through a lot of it and laughs through. I think my favorite Yoon Kyul scene had nothing to do with him being a magician or anything. It was when like during the DM when he gets picked to give his card, and he's like, oh, ooh, no, and he's just panicking, like, oh, like, he just becomes this kind of awkward but charming mess. And that doesn't fall in line with what I would think his character would be like based on what we had read about him.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, also, on the other hand, like, how many people's names do you know? Out of our 13 players, how many names do you know?
Oh, that's a hard question. Yeah, so just looking, if I, like, look at this cast page and try and cover the names up, probably, like, 4 or 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I feel like,
But I'm getting
I feel
there.
Like there are only, like, 2 that I don't know.
That
and
you
it's
don't
like,
know. Yeah.
Right. Like, and this is episode 1. Like, how long did it take us to get names down in season 1?
Yeah. I wonder what it takes, like, what they do on the side of the show to make that happen, other than they all look pretty distinct. Like, what is it about their presentation that makes each of them much more memorable this time already?
I mean, I think part of it is just, like, people know what the genius is now. Like, I mean, like, mm-hmm. Hong Chul, while, like, intros are happening, is explaining to other people, like, what's about to happen. Jiwon, like, the bandage man is like, okay, everybody's here. Welcome to the genius. And Jiwon's like, oh, that's it? And Hong Chul's like, no, he's about to explain the game.
Like, right. Yeah, they within the show aren't, like, just mysterious, like, doe-eyed characters early on. They're like, oh, this is a game that I'm in it to win. Like, I came here mm-hmm. because I was chosen and I want to win this game.
And that's one of the big things that I feel like permeates the tone of this episode so much is so much of, like, everybody knowing this is the genius, right?
Yeah.
Like, one of the first things that happen as soon as the game is announced is Hong Chul's like, okay, us four, we're an alliance. And I was like,
knows.
Wait, what? And like, and then there's also like, and then like Songmin tries to join that alliance. And so often in season 1, we had these moments where people would like try and like, you know, like there'd be an alliance talking in a room and someone would come in and they'd be like, oh, can you leave? And they're like, oh, do I have to? And it was this sort of like this like weird social moment. And that doesn't happen here because, you know, like, Songmin tries to poke his head in and they're like, oh, sorry, we're actually planning right now. You can come back later. And he's like, oh, you guys just hate me. He's like, no, it's no hard feelings. We're playing a game right now. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, it's so fascinating watching people know, like, the knowledge of the game across the board makes this more interesting and dynamic. Like, people don't have to pretend like, oh, we're doing an alliance. And like, it is funny, you know, watching Songmin and the other person like throwing notes across a room because it's like, oh, we're pretending to be lovers. But these are all just like, no, we are here to play a game. There is no, mm-hmm. we're not fighting each other. We're not making any sort of goofs about like rivalries unless we are Jinho and and Boxer.
And
Yuan, but we're just playing a game. We're having fun, and they already know that going in. And there's no like hard feelings. It continues the thing we love the most about this show. Everyone's just like kind of friendly.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good. And even like, I talked a little bit to Reese, the listener Reese, after watching this episode, and Reese was like, "So you guys predicted that that Hui Zhang would be Teacher Cha." How do you feel about that prediction?
Extremely rib. Extremely, yeah. Extremely rib.
Yeah, that was the wrong call. He was kind of like a, you know what? I'll say, like, we made the joke, during the pre-show episode.
Yeah.
Of like, they should have like Gura's son.
Yeah.
And then they did.
And then they literally, yes.
He's Gura, but like, I don't know his
Not
life
really,
outside
sorry.
Of this. Now, I don't know his life outside of this, but he feels like a Gura that's, like, within social, like, acceptable social lines. He's like a Gura who isn't trash, but still is kind of a jerk.
Right. He's just like, I don't want to, like, that's how you end up in the freaking DMs. He's just like, alliances, whatever, this is dumb. I'm trying to play, but I don't really care. And my other issue is, like, the picture that we were sent by Reese with, like, his player bio and all that stuff mm-hmm. gave me the impression that he'd be a lot sillier. And, like, charming. He's not charming at all. he's not a fun guy. He's not, like, goofy.
No, he's not, he has some charisma, but it's, like, it's that kind of, like, overconfident, like, thinks he's pretty smart guy charisma.
Yes.
Right? Where
that's
there's,
exactly.
like, when he's on his bullshit, it's, like, okay, like, you seem like you're really, like, you're playing with a level of confidence. And, like, you have a level of, like, certainty that is really, like, kind of admirable. But also, you kind of seem like... But he seems like kind of a dickhead sometimes, but also he's willing to be frank with people in a way I really appreciate.
Yeah.
At times. Like, there's a moment where, you know, alliances are forming, and some other people try to join the alliance that he's in, and he's like, listen, if we add anyone else to the alliance, we can't protect them. Mm-hmm. That would be a lie. So I'm sorry, we can't invite you because that would be a fake alliance. It's like, oh, I really respect that.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody is respectful on this one. There's nobody that I'm like, I want to see this person get eliminated now. I'm just looking at the cast photos right now just to kind of refresh my memory on who's who. And like, there's a lot of good standout plays and players so far. I'll say it again. I think Hong Chul is amazing. Both because of how passionate and how much joy he gets out of being on the Genius, and the fact that when it's time to throw down, he knows how to play. Like, he's not just goofing around and then is going to get eliminated as like a joke. There's that scene where it's like the four guys in the room, and there's clear. It's just like a game of tag where everyone is running around in circles, and Jin Ho is begging him not to get tagged, and Hong Chul is just like in the corner cackling, like, and then he gets like attacked, and he's like, I guess I lost, except I'm the snake, except I'm not the snake. Because he already has a really familiar understanding of the rules, and I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I want to also really ask you, what do you think about Jung Hyun so far? Because he is, I think he's the oldest member. Well, him and Songmin might be close in age. I have no idea, actually.
Jung Hyun seems, yeah, I would guess he's the oldest one there. I mean, so, okay, I tracked fantasy points, right?
Yeah.
We have one criteria, which is confess a lack of understanding of the rules after 10 or more minutes. He got pinged for that in two different scenes. I feel like that tells you a lot of what you need to know about him. He ended up getting a fair amount of points because he won the match, and, you know, he got a bunch of points from that. But, like, I think he's certainly smart. I don't know if he's game smart.
Yeah, well, that's the congressman part in him. That's just like, he's politics smart and can make good deals, but he's like not paying attention, honestly.
Well, and like, also, it's interesting to talk about politics sense, right? Because mm-hmm. I think we use that phrase like really flexibly.
Yeah.
But I also don't know if it's realistic. Like, we talk about politics sense, but I don't think it's very translatable, the kind of politics of, like, small group charismatic dynamics versus, like, large scale winning over an electorate.
Right. You can be great in a group of four, and then when it comes to a group of 13, you're, you know, completely, you're on a different playing field.
Mm-hmm. And so he's this, like, you know, like, former senator. He's got this, you know, or congressman, and he's got all this, you know, like, experience dealing with, like, masses of people and, like, giving speeches and, like, probably having debates and such. But, like, when you're hanging out with, like, you know, like, a pop idol, it's like, how are you going to win her over?
Yeah.
And I don't know that he has an answer to that, or at least he hasn't shown it yet.
Right, exactly, so. Yeah. I don't actually think he's that long for the game, but I sort of like them having a sort of quieter, more pensive adult on the show. Because Songmin can technically fill that role now, but if I'm going to be honest, he kind of... Did you ever watch Power Rangers 6?
Not really, no.
So there's a pretty common trope on most Power Rangers series. I don't know, actually. I only watched a little bit of Super Sentai, not much. But in Power Rangers, they always have, like, the three or four main kids. And then they have, like, a guy who is usually who's brainwashed. And in the first season, he's, like, a pawn of the villain, and then by the second season he turns face and he becomes the fourth or fifth ranger, and he's like the older type, and sometimes he comes back in future seasons. There's like a guy, the character's name is Tommy, who's in like the first four or five Power Ranger shows, and Songmin is kind of becoming the Tommy of this show, where he's like, all right, I know how to play this game, I know how to do alliances, I know how to win, I literally know some of you. And yet, I still feel like this weird outsider role because people are forming alliances and I'm not a part of them. And, like, what do I do about that? I know how to win, mm-hmm. and it requires me to work with people, and I can't.
Yeah.
And it kind of bummed me out, that scene where he's like, oh, I guess, all right, Jin Ho seems to have found some friends, but I'm just going to kind of play. I know I'm good.
I feel like it's such a powerful, like, I really, I've got to stop apologizing to using this kind of terminology. It's a really powerful character moment for him when, like, yeah, he's talking to Jinho and he's like trying to arrange an alliance, and Jinho's like, listen, it's not going to happen, Songmin. I just can't trust you.
Yeah.
And he just says, okay, I'll get out. And like, last season, Songmin would have made a hilarious big scene out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's way more subdued.
Yeah, and here he's just like, okay, I get it. It's like, oh, Songmin.
I really... Buddy. We are watching his soul and essence transfer into Hong Chul in real time, and it's a little bit heartbreaking.
I think it's just, like, I think it's what this show does and what the reality of the politics is, because, like, I feel like Songmin invested a lot in season one in establishing these connections.
Yeah.
And now it's season two, and he's being asked to start all over, the only person carried over being the person who never trusted him.
Right.
And it's like, I can't do this again.
If anything, Six, I think the relationship between Songmin and Jinho as veterans is, in a lot of ways, more interesting for our game than the relationship between Jinho and Yeon. Because that's hilarious. That's, like, the best comedic stuff in this episode. Is Yuan being like, he's Zerg rushing. Like, that guy's, he's doing that cute thing that I beat him in a couple years ago. Like, just tease, it's like he's teasing his little brother endlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And Jinho has all these things that he's like, I literally won the game, and I feel like I'm being fucked over the minute I step into this new season. Like, this is just, you guys deliberately picked my one rival, and I'm just screwed. And Yuan's like, yeah, you are screwed.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yuan
comes off as so, like, it's the power, like, we were wondering, like, we had a conversation, of course, on the last podcast, where it's like, are they gonna be the rivals we expect, or is it just like, oh no, they got, like, the producers invited them for this dynamic, but it's not like that's necessarily how it's gonna go. And Yuan steps in the door, and he's like, so after the season ended, I called the producer and said, you have to let me fuck Jinho up.
Yeah.
It's like, all right. Cool.
You're invested. I love him. I love him.
It's very, very good. And like, oh, the other, like, there's so many great, like, the moment when Yuan and Huijong are in the same room, and Yuan's being like, listen, we don't have to do this. You don't have to kill me. It's fine. We can just sit here. And Huijong's like, you know, I was a Zerg player.
Yeah.
and Yuan's like, oh no. And
he's
remember that time you triple bunker rushed
Jinho? Like, oh, no.
My favorite player.
It's important to note that Yuan is now not a StarCraft player. He's a StarCraft veteran and a poker player. So when people bring up StarCraft, he's like, oh. It's like being in your, like, 50. Like, if Adam West right now gets asked to do Batman, I'm sure he likes doing that. But if he gets asked to do Batman stuff, he's like, oh, guys, come on. Let me live my life. Let me kick Jinho's ass in peace, please.
Yeah, no, please. Let's just get a DM where it's poker and I can destroy him, please.
Oh, I forgot Adam West is no longer with us. I'm sorry. I love
him. Oh, he is? Oh, I didn't know that.
Last year, yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I wrote here, Hong Chul is just the Joker, but fun and good. Like, the way that he's just like, he's like, ooh, social dynamics. He, like, knows the genius. It's so weird having a super fan on the show. It's so weird.
He seems like the kind of, like, so he's a famous entertainer, and he seems like part of the reason that probably is because he tries to be a super fan of whatever he's on.
Yeah.
He seems like that sort of person, and that's really valuable here.
That's what has made him successful as a personality in Korea. I didn't immediately recognize him, but I googled him just as a goof, and then the first thing that came up was, like, meet the guy from the Gangnam Style video. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah. In the scene where Psy is in the elevator, and then he's, like, between a guy's legs, that's Hong Chul, who's just, like, everywhere. So that and, like, a couple of other scenes in that music video are just supposed to be, if you're Korean, then you're like, oh, it's that guy. That's neat. Like, the person in the yellow suit at the end is, like, Korea's most famous comedian ever that's still alive. So it's really fun, like, between just, like, Korean culture, K-pop, and, like, other pieces of Korean media, seeing and recognizing names that end up being on The Genius is, like, really fun. And I feel like I'm getting that more this season, because the only people I had heard of in season one were, like, Jinho and Songmin, obviously, because I know about StarCraft and I listen to K-pop. But, there's a lot more like diverse people that are popular in the current day now that we're in this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really wanted to briefly, we were talking about Songmin being sad earlier. That did produce my favorite emo text of the week. We can't forget about the emo text. There was a part where I think it's when like Jinho walks away and says like, oh, your play is not useful to me. I'm not going to form an alliance. And then the emo text says, ha, this damn life. Like, oh, God. He's clearly not that, like, not really that sad. He's just playing a game. But they just are painting Songmin as this, like, belabored, like, aw, like, frumpy, sad person. And it's kind of fun as long as it isn't, like, actually affecting him.
Yeah, we get our own, like, so far our first and only dealer moment of the season. When Songmin finds himself alone in a room with the lady dealer, and it's like, I miss season one people. They were so nice.
And we all like the bubbles cold. With every character in the corner, and then they all pop, and he's like, oh, they're all gone now. There was in one of the habits, so they split basically in this game. They're splitting everyone into different habitat rooms and having them like play a food chain game, you know, and. In one of the habitat rooms, they're just doing the thing that I think it was like Jinho and someone else were doing in season one, where they're instead of playing rock, paper, scissors, they're like playing like a paper football game or something and just deciding who gets eaten.
Do you never play this as a, I mean, you know, yeah, I usually played it with paper football, but this is a game I played in the States. Basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to flick a bottle cap across the table and make it stop as close to the edge as possible without going over.
I don't think I played exactly that, but I did play paper football. Like I understand like the concept of it. So, So was I right in my interpretation of that they're just this like they're like, all right, well, whatever, we'll just determine who wins by this.
Yep. No, that was just like somebody's gonna die. Let's flick bottle caps, and then like so Doohee goes first and immediately flicks it off the table, and like as he's getting stickered, like Yuan like flicks it like a half inch, and just like Yuan, come on, man. Super it was hard. Already over. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just have a lot, and this is like the point where I was kind of losing the plot, and and then I blinked, and then we were in the DM. Like a lot of the middle of this episode was like, oh, and we're having fun, we're just goofing around.
Yeah, I feel like I want to go back and sort of like construct a narrative here. So like, yeah, food chain game, and we've got two central alliances, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have the alliance of Hongchul, Huizhong, Dai, Yunkul. I gotta learn to say these names. Yeah, Yunkul and Yu Young. And sort of Jiwan. He kind of like walks in and out of that alliance. He can't make up his mind. And then you've got the alliance of Jinho, Yuan, Doohee, and Yun Sun. And then eventually sort of Songmin. and it's the situation where it's like basically most of the predators are on one team and they're trying to, you know, just sort of run the game through their strength. And the whole game is based on a miscalculation. Because as we figure out like later in the episode, it's like, oh wait, mathematically, like a team of all predators doesn't work.
Nope.
There's just not enough food to go around. And so that alliance basically ends up like self-destructing and, you know, there were a lot of great plays that I want to highlight. There's, you know, like the first kill of the game is Huizhong the lion and Jinho the hyena, like basically having a knife fight with stickers.
Yeah, that's
the fun part. Just like striking pose and like dodging and trying to evade each other. So there's some good, like, I'd never anticipated there being, like, a physical element to any of these games.
Right. I was going to say, that's something I really, really, really hope they do more in this season, is getting people to get physical. Because it leads to a lot of good comedy and just, like, cool, like, character moments and, like, little plays where people can be stealthy in mm-hmm. more physical ways, like you said.
I do, like, I'm glad there was never, that it never actually stopped anything from happening. Because that seems like that would be a problem. Like, Jinho manages to use it to buy time to take someone down before he's taken down. But no one ever actually successfully, like, stops a sticker from being applied. And it seems like that would be shitty.
Yeah, because then it's like, well, we all decided you're going down, and now you just ran away. Like, this is, like, eventually that premise can't last. in a game where everyone knows everyone. It's not like you can run into a crowd and get away.
You got to feel sorry for the dealer in that moment where Jin-ho is like threatening to throw all the stickers out the window and stuff. And the dealer's just sort of standing there like, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
That scene made me think of televised sports where I'm like, oh God, they have to have a lot of cameras to make sure they don't miss like an accidental sticker plant or like a really stealthy one. And then also, yeah, you can imagine some producer coming on the speaker when he's saying like, I'll throw him out the window. Like, no, stop. Jin-ho, please stop. Do not. Please play the game.
Yeah.
What were some other big plays that you liked?
I really want to give a shot. We don't have a fantasy point category for this, and I almost want to add one because Yoon Sun chooses to lose the game in order to make her allies win in a way that's really like, so she's playing as the mouse.
Mouse's
job is to help the lion, and she's like, I'm gonna get the lion killed, which will make me lose the game, but it's like, I have a choice between helping my allies or helping myself, and I'm picking my allies, and I admire the fuck out of that.
Yeah, especially this early on, if you start helping yourself this early, you're gonna lose a lot of potential help.
Right.
and it's there's very little benefit. Like, you can win a DM, but you can't win back an alliance in without sacrificing something.
Mm-hmm.
So she makes the right decision there.
Exactly. I totally agree. It's a situation where it's like, you need to make the risky investment in the future to say, you can trust me.
Right, exactly. There is so much trust in this game. Even just like, you're allowed to tell, you tell your teammates what animal you are, and you're allowed to lie. And even the whole chameleon mechanic, where like, one of the players gets to be a chameleon who gets to take on the appearance of another animal and make alliances as if they are another animal. All of that stuff requires like, good partnership and like listening, and you don't want to lose that stuff this early.
Mm-hmm. You even get I feel like that's what a part of what Hui Zhang like screwed up.
Yeah,
is that he formed an alliance and then he decided the alliance was all about making him win. And it's like, no, it's a lot bigger than you, my dude.
Yeah, it to shout like someone who figures out alliances are the importance of alliances really early and manipulates them well is, I think, Dae. I think she ends up joining an alliance just for like to hang on to for a while and to go like, oh, if I have enough people, like just enough people to work with where it is good for me, I don't have to talk to anyone else, I don't have to start any drama, I don't have to get into any fights. And I think that is a skill that is going to be really, really useful for her going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just knowing exactly who to talk to and to know how to block everyone else out. Because even, like, Kyungran had that problem in Season 1 where she was like, I don't want to dislike anyone, and I want to be able to work with everyone. But, you know, that can obviously... you have to sacrifice a lot of game sense for that sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like we don't have a good analog for that play in Season 1, because basically what Dae does is she's like, I'm going to join an alliance, and I'll help them as it's convenient, but I'm playing my own game.
Yeah.
Mostly, I'm just checking some people off of the enemy list. And it's like, that's really smart.
Right, for sure. I see so much potential in her. There's like a couple people in here, like Doohee, where I'm like, oh, it's funny that everyone is like, he's a criminal, he's a hacker, we can't trust a hacker, but he must be good at something. But like, he doesn't have much to do. He doesn't really express himself much. So he is somebody I could see also leaving early. But definitely, Dae, I think, like, has she knows the game that she's playing. She knows the 13 episode plan.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to point out. So this season, I'm trying to be a fan of plays, not players, and so I want to highlight, you know, some other key moments.
Yeah.
I want to highlight the moment of Hui Zhang realizing he's about to die and just sitting there in English, going, "Oh my god!
Oh my god! Oh my god!"
Yeah, it's compelling content. I don't know how else to put it.
Right. It's just fun. It's like, and you don't need everybody. Like I said earlier, you know, I haven't noticed any like big personalities. Like Young Kyo hasn't come into his own yet. But I'd rather have big plays than big players at this point, to be honest. Because at some point you can't make real humans be themselves and also be interesting. Not everyone is on all the time. Hongchul is on all the time. Not everyone here is on all the time, but everyone can do a good play and can make a good alliance and can surprise us in unique and interesting ways. But so, do you want to get to the DM?
Well, we should probably do our homework first.
homework.
So for our homework, we didn't have any winner or loser, obviously, because this is the start of a new season. So we just played something together. I picked it, but you know, there's nothing to be won here. I am curious how you will rate it. However, we played there's so much setup for literally almost everyone in the world to understand what the hell I'm talking about right now.
It's a text-based online computer game.
Yeah, it's like World of Warcraft, but it's only words.
Word of Warcraft.
It's called Materia Magica, and it is a MUD, which stands for Multi-User Dungeon. It's been running since 1995. With little patches here and there, and it is one of a handful of the style of, you know, like text-based massively multiplayer games that I used to play back in high school. And I brought you in. This was your first time playing any MUDs, right?
I think so.
How was that for you? I imagine it's a fairly unique experience.
Definitely. So I mean, I played like text-based adventure games before. Or I've watched playthroughs of the early King's Quest stuff, and like before they had a graphic interface, and I played Zork and Zork 2, but I haven't, like, something about it being online, because I've played a lot of MMOs. MMOs are like my genre of video game, my forever genre, and that aspect of it immediately clicked with me. And like, I've recently gotten into tabletop stuff as well, like D&D, and I think there's something really incredible and unique about giving the player the freedom to draw the scene. Because this game, like, describes visuals to you, like any novel. You know, it's like, here is the room you are standing in, and there's a little bit of flavor text. But as you were walking me through the tutorial, you were like, we are in this place. You know, imagine it however you want. We are going to go forward, and then we're going to be in, you know, generic fantasy world, and you can kind of think of it however you want, visualize it however you want. And I really, really, really like that. I like thinking of, like, camera shots and lighting and what kind of creatures and flora and fauna and what the people look like and what they sound like and all of that. I love that stuff. I think it's so cool, because I think, honestly, like, the fantasy world in my head is just objectively more fun to me than anything a creator can make. Because I can put infinite creativity into it, but you even admitted at some point that while we were playing it, like, once we got into the main gist of it, there is clearly some structure. Like, you can go here and you can take on this quest and you can talk to this guy, but it kind of just turns into a grind. It kind of becomes like, you should sit here and fight whatever comes your way. And there's a combat system, and there's, like, a dice roll aspect to that. And that was the part where the game lost me a little bit, where I was like, oh, this is just what we do. And to be fair, I played a lot of stuff like that, like grindy MMOs when I was younger. Like, I played a lot of RuneScape and a lot of Runes of Magic, which were both very, very... And Adventure Quest, all three of which were super grindy, like low fidelity video games where the time spent was the grind. And that's something I would have liked if I was in, like, elementary or middle school. I would be fine with that, because the promise of being, like, better or stronger than my cohorts is, like, really enticing. So I don't know. I want to play more of it, to see more scenes and to, like, meet more NPCs and do stuff like that. But if it means, like, having to hit the same sheep 15 times in a row and just waiting for it to die, then that's where it kind of lost me. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's a bummer, because, like, MUDs are... Can you really call something a dying breed when it's, like... It's a dead breed, right?
Well, like, it's a dead breed that has evolved into the most alive breed of all time. Like, MMOs exist because of MUDs, period.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. But they're also less than MUDs in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And more in others. But, like, the MUDs of my childhood that I liked Materia Magica, okay, back in the day, right? It was one of those ones that I would come back to, but it's, like, the ones that were to me, like, the real gems, the real, like, ones that I would be, like, proud to show anybody, they're gone. And there's no way to experience them anymore.
And I think, yeah, you're then getting into a much broader conversation about, like, preservation and how do we retain these worlds and these entire, like, universes and communities through that were just on a text server. Like, I think you said when we logged on that there were, like, what was it, like, 60-something or 45 people playing at once? And, like, I'm sure all of those people super care and they're all super passionate and maybe most of them know each other. But, like, eventually they have no reason to stay on. Eventually the lights are going to get shut off, and, like, whatever company running this server is just going to not run anymore. And it's really sad. Like, I think about that all the time. I think about the death of online games and how you can put a billion hours into hanging out with your friends and making these great relationships in a Materia Magica or in a MMO. And then the next day they just turn the game off, and it's gone. And there's no way to recover it. Like, it is really scary, and that's why you want to try and form these relationships at, like, outside of the game and get to know these people either in real life or through other mediums or other games, because so much of online space is temporary and can be gone in an instant.
One of the most magical, like, so I was a big part of a Cowboy Bebop MUD for a long time.
Hell yeah.
Which had a bunch of, like, crafting and space travel and combat and bounty hunting, and it was a really, like, fleshed out awesome world. And then the person who made it had a big conflict with the person who was doing most of the moderating, and he bailed, right? Mm-hmm. So it was just the person doing the moderating, and he didn't ever add it to the game because he didn't know how. He just knew how to keep it running.
Heartbreaking.
And also, by the way, the guy who built it was right.
Ooh, spicy.
He just was. The person who was running it, the moderator guy, like, named himself Spike, like the main character of Cowboy Bebop. You know, he's a dickhead. So, like, the other guy, the guy who built it, went on to make another MUD. He made, like, a Naruto one.
Ooh.
And I played that for a while, and I was like, this is all right, but, like, I'm not that big of a fan of Naruto. And I was talking to him, and he was like, I was working on version 2.0 of that Cowboy Bebop one. And so much of that work was, like, with other people, so I don't feel okay putting it up and just, like, leaving it up, but I'm gonna run it for a week. And that week was, it was just, like, this, like, prototype 2.0 version of a game I had spent hundreds of hours in, of this MMO that was up for a week, and then it was gone, and I never saw it again.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was crazy. And, you know, like, I knew going into it wasn't going to stay. So it wasn't like, you know, I was sad when it went away, but it's like, no, that's what was going to happen. But it was crazy. There was all this stuff. You could, like, you could hack, like, there, you know, there was a built in, like, system where it's like, oh, if a player is killing a bunch of, like, you know, normal, like, civilian NPCs, they automatically get a bounty, right? And you could raise your skill in hacking so that you assigned bounties to, like, normal enemies so that people would accidentally get bounties on their heads and then other player bounty hunters would go after them. There's all this crazy stuff.
Damn, yeah.
So it's just, there's so much. Materia Magica, for as built out and honed as it is like one of the most mechanically simple MUDs. And it's a bummer that I didn't get to show you how crazy those games got.
Right, I got a glimpse of a lot of that when you were, like, we were doing class creation or character creation, and all of the classes have, like, these abilities that unlock at high level, and it, I mean, again, my closest parallel is D&D, where it's just like, oh, if you really play this character a lot, you're gonna get some wild stuff that you can do. Some, like, reality-warping, cool magic, or attacks that are just devastating in really unique ways. And all of that seems really appealing, but it's just like, do you have the time and interest in doing it, and, like, can you fit that into your life in a way that works? Like, I think there is absolutely a world in which I got into MUDs as well. I just happened to be just a little bit younger than you, to where they were not popular enough when I was getting into these types of things.
I mean, they weren't popular when I did either. I honestly don't know how it happened.
Well, yeah, then we were just on separate... We were just on, like, one forum away from being on, in the same games together.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's cool being like, oh, this was all going on when I was, like, in elementary school showing off my Mithril armor to my friends in RuneScape. And meanwhile, people are, like, having these incredible adventures in this game. Like, it's just... Really, it's just a different flavor of the same, like, pizza pie that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to play more of it. I would love to try different mods and just kind of, like, explore them in small ways. Like, I think this little tour that we got was really nice. I got a good vibe out of it. It felt like it's a really expansive game. It's like, have you ever played, like, pre-Morrowind Elder Scrolls games?
Not pre-Morrowind, no.
Okay, so... The first two Morrowind games are, or not the first two Elder Scrolls games are like, they are 3D and first person, but Daggerfall in particular is just like massive. Like, I think it's still technically one of the biggest maps in a video game. It had that credit for a while. I'm sure like ESO technically beats it now, but there was just so much there, and not all of it was unique or like bespoke, but it was just huge because they didn't have to like render all of it. It didn't all. It was just like, there are 6,000 dungeons because we can just copy-paste dungeon models.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt massive in a way that was satisfying as a young kid. But new games like now, you can't make a game that big anymore because you have to everything needs to be modeled. Everything needs to be 3D and really high fidelity and cost hundreds and thousands of hours of work and money. Like, you cannot make something of that scale. I don't know how you could do it. Make something of that scale... That's still such a in such like a humble format as text based, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does a 2018 mod even look like? Ugh.
I want to know.
Let's make it. It's just so much writing. Nightmare. The thing and that scares me. Yeah.
I don't want to work with SWR 2.0. No, thank you.
No, thanks. I'm good. I can give you a rating if you want.
Sure. Let's hear it.
I'm gonna give you a 4.
Really?
That's yeah.
Higher than I expected.
Oh, right. Man. The thing is, I could tell when we were playing it, because we were, like, playing it, you know, on a call with people and stuff. Like, it didn't sound like I was super enjoying it, but I spent most of that evening thinking about it and just being like, oh, man, like, I want to go back and do this and this and this. And I think that is worth, yeah, that's absolutely worth the stars, the points.
Awesome. I'll have to look up, not for homework, but I'll have to look up some of the other mods and see what else is running. I was, like, when I was going to do that, I was like, well, if anything's running, it's Materia Magica. Materia Magica used to be huge. Like, I used to log in and there would be, you know, like 2,000 people on there.
Woo!
So it's like, this is still running, I'm sure. But maybe I'll look and see if some of the more mechanically complex ones are still running.
Sounds exciting.
Alan?
6.
Let's kick the beat.
1, 2, 3, kick it.
It's time to go mushroom hunting with our DM. What was that song? So, we didn't mention it, but the elimination candidate ended up being Hui Zhang, because he both lost and also his behavior made people want him to go home. And then he picked Yun Sun for his deathmatch opponent because he feels like the way he put it was he's angry at Yun Sun, and he's like, I need to prove that I can act on this anger, that like if I'm mad at someone I can take them down or else there's no point in me being here. And so they end up playing the deathmatch Quattro.
I love Gundam.
Quattro Bagina is the name of a pilot for the Ayug who okay. That's not a joke. That's just me talking. So Quattro is a game where you are going to make, an expression of 4 cards. All have to have different numbers and colors. And basically you want the largest value you can get. The cards consist of 1 through 10 in red, blue, yellow, and green, and then a 0. The cards will be shuffled. Each deathmatch opponent will get 4 cards. The rest of the cast will get 3. And then basically you open cards to lock them in, and then like have to trade with every other player in order to form the best combination you can. And all of this is set to the song from Cowboy Bebop during Mushroom Samba, when Ed is like riding a cow after a dude who sells mushrooms.
Fuck yeah. mushroom hunting baby.
Actually, I guess it's just a scooter. But listen, there's a cow involved. The music choice in this show is weird sometimes.
It's the license they got, baby. They have the whole Cowboy Bebop soundtrack, tracks 1 through 7,000.
They're going to use all of them.
Right.
So I feel like the pregame of this death match starts to give us a sense of just how much the bar has been raised for this season, you know?
In terms of quality of the DM, you mean?
And quality of the competitors, frankly. I mean, like, not, I don't mean to judge them as people, but how much more in tune they are. Like, this is the first DM, and both of these players come up with a special strategy to communicate with their allies without tipping off the other player, execute basically flawlessly on their game plan, and it comes down to luck.
Right, exactly. It's like, because I made this in my notes, like, they don't have enough alliances at this point to make the ally thing that useful, like the people helping them pick cards. And they did get to talk and like confer with people, and that's obviously an important strategy, but it's not like, oh, my best friend would never lie to me. Like, and correct me if I'm wrong on understanding the rules, but the players giving them cards have no necessarily big reason to keep their player alive and give them their best card.
I mean, other than just, like, social standing, no.
Yeah, exactly. So you can just, like, I think just Songlin or Jinho is just like, oh, I've played, I know how these kinds of games work. I don't have to do shit. Like, I can hope, like, I'll be nice, and that's the benefit of it, but, like, I don't have to. Mm-hmm. And then you get, like, just brutally honest Hong Chul, who's like, oh, no, you should not have picked me. I only have bad cards. And then he does. Like, there's no lie there. It's just like, you made a bad pick because this is also a luck game, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think often the genius game producers kind of shy away from leaning on luck at all, because sometimes that's not that exciting to watch. But then sometimes Yunsoon gets a yellow 9 and wins the entire game by 1 point, and mm-hmm. it feels like the greatest moment in sports history, and it's not even in a sport.
I feel like luck's a really good, like, X factor. Like, you know, I play a lot of competitive games, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, check this out. This is my podcast. I can pull out my soapbox here. RNG in fighting games makes me want to fucking die.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you also play a lot of fighting games where there should super duper never ever ever be any RNG.
Like, you can have a little maybe in some situations, but like when I'm playing against, I don't know, I'm just going to randomly pick a character, Faust in Guilty Gear, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, I'm going to do the move where I pull out a random item. Oh, I pulled out a meteor shower. It's just going to rain fireballs for a little bit here. It's like, well, okay, you pressed X and got lucky, and I'm going to lose this round now. Like, fucking, that sucks.
Yeah, right. Do you like luck in Dota?
I do. That's the other side of it, and sometimes I don't, sometimes I do. There's a character named Phantom Assassin, and her ultimate ability is just once she hits level 6, it's like, okay, if she puts the point in her ultimate, she has, like, I think it's a 20% chance for her hits to crit for 300% damage. It's just like, okay, sometimes you just get erased by that. Sometimes she just, like, she hits you, and literally there's a spray of blood, and you're gone. If you're one of the weaker characters. And it's like, that's healthy, because there's also an element where if a game doesn't have enough random elements, it can be too controllable. It can be too solvable, right?
The thing with luck in strategy games and in this deathmatch is you can rely on luck working to a certain extent. And mm-hmm. you can take it as a like known percentage quantity of like, this is the chance that I'm going to get a card I need. I need to get X type of card and X color, whatever, and asking this person will give me X percent chance of that happening. And mm-hmm. and that ends up being a really valid strategy, and that's why the game turns around really fast, is because she realizes, oh, I can just, as long as I make the right plays early on, my last card doesn't even have to be that good. And it seems like she just has the game in the bag, and then it turns around, and obviously Hui Zhang gets some very lucky plays in quick succession. Like, he mm-hmm. looks really stressed through the whole thing, because he's relying on luck.
Well, he's communicating a lot, too. I think they're on pretty much even footing there. Because mm-hmm. he's got, I mean, frankly, his method of communication is stronger, Because Yun Sun's method of communication is, I'm going to ask for a thing. If you have it, touch your hair if you don't look away. And Hui Zhang is like, communicate to me what your best cards are by tapping various parts of your badge, which is, like, really sophisticated.
Yeah, it reminds me of Jinho, actually, doing the, like, card back analysis in that episode of season one, where it's like, oh, yeah, you figured it out. You gamed the game.
Yeah, so I feel like you're kind of selling him a little bit short here, and it's most... I mean, like, yeah, I think they both played as well as they could have played.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just luck was the deciding factor. I do want to specially shout out from the pregame, though, that Yun Sung is giving me some flashbacks to Kyungran right now.
Really?
There's a moment where Ji-won is sort of wandering around and he doesn't have anyone he's allied with, right? And he wanders into the room with Hui-jong and all of his allies. And Hui-jong turns and is like, ah, Ji-won, welcome. And is like about to make the pitch. And Yun Sun doesn't see this happen, but she just like turns on heel and like literally like jogs over, like not quite a run, but like moves fast over to that room, pulls the door open and says, Ji-won, I'm counting on you, and then closes the door.
Yeah, she's
like a psychic sense that something socially needs to be done in that moment.
She had a new type flash.
She did. And it reminds me of like the moments of like of like Kyungran, like, you know, I mean, season one, episode one of Kyungran, like setting up Sungyu to win and then sort of just walking around, keeping tabs on the other alliances, you know, just like that social mindfulness.
Right.
So.
It's going to be encouraged. That kind of thing is especially for DMs, like, oh, shit, I need to make this social thing happen right this second is going to be to anyone's benefit, anyone who does that more.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wish we saw a little bit more of the pre-planning of this DM, but mm-hmm. having it like hinted at and then revealed over time is also really fun, like for dramatic purposes. But it kind of just progresses for a while. This is honestly where I felt like the episode, if you'll allow me to be a little bit critical, kind of went on a little long. Because I asked you when the way that we're watching this show is the friends of the podcast have provided us like links to watch this online, and the version that we had is split into two halves. One is 45 minutes, the other one is like 30 something, like 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, why is it longer than 45? Because I am used to American television where everything is like 50 minutes max, unless it's on Netflix. And I forgot that, yeah, every episode of The Genius is over an hour. They are never less than an hour. And none of that is commercials. None of that is fat. None of that is, like, boring. There's, like, recap, I guess. But it basically mm-hmm. rounds out to about an hour. And as soon as you get after an hour, I'm feeling like I'm watching a short film. And that was where I was like, all right. Like, I get, like, this DM feels weirdly long. We're having fun. And it is interesting. But I want to see the big plays.
Yeah, I feel like it was a solid DM. It wasn't one of my favorites, and I feel like I had a little bit of the issue you had with its pacing, but I don't think that's because of its length. I think it's because there were so few options for them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you're at the point where it's like, okay, I just need to use up some of these trades, what you get back doesn't matter because you have to just immediately give that card away again.
Right. There's, like, very little stakes to the individual card. Draws.
Mm-hmm. So it seemed like that game could use a little more refining as far as making like the mid game of very much interest. You know, the beginning was exciting and the end was very intense. But
well, I mean, as we know, it's The Genius, so we're gonna have to get used to this game because it's gonna be every other game for the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe there are no repeat games in this season. I believe
no
I've been
fucking
told that.
Way. You're kidding.
I feel like I heard that. I feel like I remember when I was complaining a bunch about the repeats in season one, like somebody in the community was like, that's a season one thing. They don't do that after that.
Yeah, I would hope some producer realized that that's like the one fluff in this game show is like, yo, your DMs need to be more interesting than the main games. Like, please make these interesting and don't repeat if you can.
Are you ready for the winning streak game again? This is violence. This is abuse. Well, so Hui Zhang goes home.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives a fairly resonant speech, I would say.
Yeah, right? for a week one, like, I don't feel like, what was the name of the guy who left in the first week, the politician?
Jun Seok.
I don't think I remembered anything about Jun Seok leaving. I thought he was just like, all right, bye, I lost, that sucked.
Yeah.
Hui Jung is at least like, oh, like, I hope everyone does really well, and I had a lot of fun, and like, what is the line, what is the gist of his speech, though?
He has, it's really, I found it way more powerful on the second, because on the first viewing, I was kind of taking notes.
Yeah.
On the second viewing, I was not, and so I was able to pay a little more attention. And he's like, I feel like in this game, I kind of came across as an asshole. I kind of came across as like overconfident. I came in tonight expecting to win.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And I think that's the world telling me that I didn't need to like watch my fucking ego. And that's like, it's a lesson in, like he says, like that's a lesson in humility I'm going to take with me. And it's like, that's a really strong statement. I'm like really impressed.
It is. It just that self-awareness. Because, like, Gura didn't say, like, I was the heel for the whole season when he got eliminated. He didn't say
that. He said, fucking rock, paper, scissors, I swear to God.
Yeah, basically. He said, if you motherfuckers play this dumb baby game again, I'm going to freak out. but this guy's like, no, we just started and I was already being kind of shitty. I guess it makes sense that I lost. Sorry about that. Peace. Good luck to everyone. Very humble. Very respectful. Very good. No bad blood against Hui Jung. I'm kind of okay with him leaving, though, because it didn't seem like he had a lot to bring. He didn't live up to the potential for me picking him for my fantasy draft. And that was why I was like, yeah, he had to go.
So here's something I want to know. This is an idea that didn't exist in season one, but season two is all about breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want there to be a road for contestants to get back into the game?
Oh, shit.
Like, what if, you know, Hui Jong, like, came back as a guest for an episode or something, right? He's like, oh, here's, you know, for main match 5, you know, we're gonna have guests, and here's Hui Jong, and he's back. And while he's there, he finds the token of immunity.
Huh.
Of immortality. Does that mean that, like, would you be into that meaning he could come back, or that he could challenge for the DM to get back in or something?
Like, I like the idea of him coming back as a guest. Mm-hmm. And I like him being involved in a DM, because they kind of did that in season one, right? But the season is paced around the games knowing that we have fewer and fewer people every week. And that is what lets there are only so many 13-player games you can make. That's, like, really hard to make. I actually think the main games get better the fewer players there are. Not just because the stakes are higher, but because, like, you can do more dynamic stuff when you don't have, it's not all about, like, huge groups of people.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So I don't want to keep us at 13 or high, like, greater than 10 for too long, because I think the game just gets better over time naturally, and bringing people back would kind of fuck with that.
But what if you kept the numbers balanced? What if it's like you go home, but you come back, but two people leave?
Two people go.
Yeah,
that's exciting. the only thing is then, like, I would really have to like you. I would really have to like you to be happy that you're back. I'd like if Hui Jong did that and then, like, we lost, I don't know, like, Dae and Songmin, I would just be like, no, we're not watching the season anymore. We're like, goodbye. Cancel the wager.
Yeah, fair enough. So it is now time, I think, for us to hit up fantasy points.
Yes, yes.
And so our fantasy points for this episode, I'll have a full breakdown. So in show notes, like, listen, folks, draft along with us, play along with us. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
And if you need clarification on any rules, I'm at @6Detmar on Twitter, but we'll do the proper plug zone in a bit. Go ahead and ask me questions about rules or think like changes you think we should make. You know, I'm not saying necessarily we'll do them, because, like, maybe your idea is like, what if the winner got $1,000? I'd be like, well, okay, my bank account is currently $2. No. But scores for our players, I'm going to read now. For if you have other players on your team, consult the show notes. There will be links to the rules, and there will be links to score breakdowns for every episode.
Bring the shit. Sorry.
Exactly. So my draft was Songmin, Yoon Sun, and Yuan. Songmin made 27 points. Yoon Sun made 10, and Yuan made 4. That gives me a total of 41 points for this episode. Your team was Jinho, it was Hong Chul, and it was Hui Zhang. Jinho made a whopping 33 points this episode.
Yikes.
Strong, strong return. Hong Chul got off with 4. You know, you don't win the DM, or the main match, you don't get too much.
Right.
And Hui Zhang really, really fucked up your groove pretty bad.
Yeah.
He got a negative 13. Our only negative score, in fact. So that leaves us with a total of 41 for me and 24 for you. That means I am leading at the end of this episode. And that gives us several orders of business. First, who would you like to be your new player replacing Hui Zhang?
I had an answer and now I'm thinking hard about it and I'm nervous. Shit, then. I guess Daye is going to be my new pick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's the pick.
Yeah.
All right. As per our rules, and you don't have to do this for at home, but I think it makes the show more fun. When we redraft, we are able to pick a new special rule. And so basically the way this will work is if you redraft again, I'll replace your rule. I won't stack them. And if I redraft, you can give me a special rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to add a positive one that'll work for both of us. When a player is a star of a flashback explaining why they just did an amazing play, that's plus 5.
So when you say that's a special rule for me, does that mean...
That just means that we each can choose one. You'll get to choose one. Like, it'll apply to both of us. I am picking that rule because you redrafted.
Oh, okay.
When I have to redraft, if I have to redraft...
wow, let's see. Yeah, you then, just get top 3.
Then you will get to pick a rule.
Okay.
And then if you have to redraft again, I will have to replace the rule that I've given you.
Okay.
And lastly, I have some homework for you.
Hell yeah. Bring it on, baby.
So I feel like I had a good experience assigning you something that you weren't used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll continue with that train.
Now I have to go on a double date. Whoa, no!
That's abuse. That's, like, actually abuse.
Yeah, let's
That's,
don't
like,
do that
really
too.
Abuse.
Yeah,
I assume you have access to Netflix.
Yes.
I would like you to watch Season 1, Episode 29 of Lucha Underground, titled Fight to the Death.
Ugh.
We have 3 matches in this episode. We will, of course, have Johnny Mundo versus Aerostar. We'll have Prince Puma versus Hernandez. And we'll have Mil Muertes versus Phoenix. It is an excellent episode.
Excelente, please.
Are you ready for some wrestling?
Never. Do I need to know anything?
No. Okay. They've got little recaps and just sort of, you know, be a fan of the characters.
Which episode is it again? I'm looking at them right now.
Season 1, episode
29.
Fight I tried death. To pick an episode that was, like, fairly self-explanatory and also just had good work in it.
Are there, like, works and shoots in this show?
In theory, I think it's mostly just works, though.
Okay. I don't know what those words mean. I'm excited.
All right. Well, Alan, it's time for the plug zone. Would you like to plug anything?
You didn't, like, trick me or deceive me into saying it.
That could be considered a deception in and of itself.
Oh, I guess you're right. Fuck, the ultimate deception is being honest.
No, ultimate deception's a Mortal Kombat game for the... Never mind.
No! Hi, hello, I'm Alan. I'm on Twitter, at Alan Ibrahim. That's spelled AllenIbrahim. I can also be found on a couple of other podcasts. One is Chats, a television podcast, wherein my friend Majon and I watch television shows. We're currently watching Pushing Daisies and having a lot of fun. You can also hear me monthly on Fireside Friends at firesidefriends.net, where Ryan, Katie, and I watch and consume media and discuss it in a fun way. And we just put out a new episode for the month of May, where we read the webcomic Goodbye to Halos. And finally, if you want to hear me guest on another podcast, I'm on the Scanline Patreon exclusive podcast that 6 hosts with our friend Jen called Oops All Anime. There are a couple episodes where I got to co-host and they're really fun. One of them is where we talk about Gundam Wing. That one's good. We got K-On. We got Baby Steps, of course, a classic. Just a lot of good things.
And if you want to find me on the internet, I'm at SixDetmar. That's SIXDETTMAR. And as far as my creative work, hey, guess what, folks? I finally did it. As soon as I stop talking and say goodbye, you're going to hear a little bumper I made that explains all the podcasts on the Scanline Media Network and gives you little demo samples from each episode or from each podcast. You can hear, like, you know, 5 seconds of us talking and hear what that show is like. Check them out. They're all good.
It's a good bumper. I'm in it.
You are in it. You haven't heard the bumper, though.
Yes, it's in the latest Oops All Anime.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, it is.
Solid bumper.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I need a new microphone, though.
Yeah.
But we're working on that. Anyway, until next time, folks, keep your garnets close, but keep Jinho's garnets closer.
Genius.
You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts, like Bottle Crow Reborn. So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager. And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. Why does everyone call Jinho Kong? And Jinho, like, really circuitously explains, because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So, if you're averse to frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Oops All Anime Gaiden. I've known some podcasters with taste, and they're all cowards. Let's talk about today's menu.
Oh my God.
For the Emiya family. Operation Cereal.
Episode 4 was a bit more understandable, but also, I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
And he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face.
A tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off her eye and goes, I'll kill you.
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia.